I'm Brooke Gladstone, sitting in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC and WNYC.org. Today, we're wrapping up the Brian Lehrer Show Facebook project on Activist New York. For the past few weeks, the team here has been posting images from the Museum of the City of New York's exhibit on the history of activism in the five boroughs. Listeners shared, liked, and posted their insights on the iconic images, and more than a few of you had deeply personal connections to what they saw. Joining me now is Sarah Henry, Chief Curator of the Museum of the City of New York. Welcome back, Sarah.
Hey, Brooke.
So there are 20 images in this album depicting activism in the city, from the destruction of a statue in 1776 to the Brooklyn trolley car strike of 1899 to a meeting of the Reds and Socialists in Union Square in 1930 and beyond. So, listeners, you can check this out at facebook.com/Brian Lehrer, WNYC. Sarah, what's the theme here?
Well, these are all drawn from the collections of the Museum of the City of New York, and as you said, related to our new exhibition called Activists New York. And that exhibition is really taking a look at the breadth and depth of activism in New York City. You know, our mission at the Museum of the City of New York is to explore the qualities that define the city, and New Yorkers speaking their minds, getting engaged in the city and the world, and letting people know what they think. That's part of our history. So it's really a broad spectrum of causes, methodologies, ideologies, and time periods.
There was one image, though, that got a huge amount of attention, maybe because a lot of the listeners were alive when it happened. It was a flag burning in Sheep's Meadow in 1967. It's kind of hard to imagine something like that happening in the middle of Central Park today.
Sure. Well, Central Park was a place where a lot of political events were taking place at that time. You know, the parks have been opened up, actually, by the Lindsay administration, which is something we dealt with in an exhibition about John Lindsay. And be-ins were happenings, the famous Hoving happenings. And, yes, the Sheep Meadow was a site of protests, including this very visible flag burning.
You know, Anti-Vietnam War protests.
Anti-Vietnam War protests. This is from 1967. You can see the huge crowd and beautiful photograph, actually, where you see the flag on fire, and you also see the black flags popping up around the crowd, which I know is something that one of the listeners commented on.
Yeah, one listener named Norma said that, "I remember being offended when these burnings happened, but even more by the presence of the black flags of anarchy. I thought then, and I think now, that these actions hindered our ability to end the war sooner. It also gave some people in the movement the idea to turn to violence, something terrible." We don't know if that's true, but that's her perception of it.
Well, it certainly was controversial, and intentionally so, of course.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I was just saying, one of the themes of the exhibition, of course, is what are the methods if you want to make change happen? How do you draw attention to your cause? And activists in New York from, you know, the women suffragists all the way to the present find ways to draw the attention of the rest of the city and of the media to what they're doing, sometimes by being intentionally provocative.
I want to bring in Bo Young, who's one of the Brian Lehrer Show listeners who contributed to the project. He's a publisher of White Crane Books, also with gaywisdom.org. Welcome, Bo.
Good morning.
You commented on one of the first images in the album. It was a photo of Bayard Rustin standing beside a sign for the March on Washington in 1963. Tell us more about Rustin and his role in the march.
Rustin was an early gay rights victim, actually. He was arrested for lewd conduct in California in 1953, and as a result, he was sort of sidelined and pushed to the background, when in fact, he's the person who probably most influenced Martin Luther King in introducing him to the concept of nonviolence.
And you posted a Rustin quote. You said 25,000 30 years ago, the barometer of human rights in the United States were black people. This is no longer true. The barometer for judging the character of people in regard to human rights is now those who consider themselves gay, homosexual, or lesbian. He said that in 1986, right?
Yes, I wouldn't want to get into more oppressed than thou comparisons, but I think it's really important that he said that, and that he was always very outspoken, mm-hmm. and paid for it.
Okay. And I'll say that Bayard Rustin is really a key figure in the exhibition at the Museum of the City of New York, and we have a remarkable artifact as well as this photograph on view. It's a gold watch that's engraved to Bayard from Martin, dated August 1963, and that was Martin Luther King's gift to Bayard Rustin to thank him for organizing the March on Washington, which he did largely behind the scenes for all the reasons that you just said. But, you know, a March on Washington with hundreds of thousands of people just doesn't happen spontaneously, and he was a great strategist and organizer.
And they really tried to discredit him. I forget the senator's name now, but there was a picture of Rustin speaking with King, and King was in his bath. And the implication was that there was a homosexual relationship between them. And they were using this.
Okay. Bo, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Sarah, in a minute we're going to talk with Jonathan Mahler, who wrote a piece in the New York Times Magazine about Oakland being the center of radical activism in the U.S. these days. How do you think New York City's present compares with its past? Is there a different kind of activism today than we've seen in some of these images?
Well, one of the themes of the exhibition is that activism doesn't just take one stance and one kind of strategy. So, yes, protests, being out in the street, the public square is very important in New York and other large cities, and obviously Oakland as well. But activism goes beyond protests and holding picket signs, and it has to do with organizing and with the media and with raising money. And New York has often played a role that is in a way behind the scenes. For example, in the civil rights movement, very visible public protests during the civil rights movement, but New York was also a place where the work of activism and of organizing was going on behind the scenes. So I would say, comparing today and the past, yes, we see the public square being used, most obviously with Occupy Wall Street, but also all kinds of things that are not visible to us.
Sarah, I'm just going to, before I say goodbye to you, I want to talk to you about your exhibit and this project. The museum is also collecting public photographs of recent activism from anywhere in the five boroughs during the last 30 days. And there's a blog. A link to that blog is on our website with these photographs. What kinds of submissions are you getting?
We've been getting all sorts of things, and it's very important to the exhibition that its activism is not just about the past, and to keep it present and up to date. So in the exhibition, one of the highlights really is an installation in which these images are being projected, so you can see what's been happening these days. We've had a lot of images from public protests with people holding signs, but also people working in community gardens and soup kitchens, so that it really is taking the temperature, I guess it's fair to say, of the city as we move forward in our continuing history of activism.
Thank you so much, Sarah Henry.
My pleasure.
Sarah Henry is the chief curator for the Museum of the City of New York. That Activist New York album will still be up at facebook.com/Brian Lehrer, WNYC. You can check it out anytime, share it with your friends, and still post comments. I'm Brooke Gladstone, in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC and WNYC.org. Now we'll shift our attention to activism in Oakland, California. Jonathan Mahler, contributing writer to the New York Times Magazine, joins me now. He's also the author of Ladies and Gentlemen, The Bronx is Burning. Jonathan, welcome to WNYC.
Oh, my pleasure to be here.
Howard Cosell never really said that, though, did he?
There's a lot of discussion about that. This whole separate story.
Well, we'll stick with the Oakland story for now. Your piece was titled Oakland, the Last Refuge of Radical America. For those of us who remember the Oakland riots last winter and last fall, are you talking about the Occupy movement, or does it go beyond that?
Well, it's the Occupy movement, but in a sense, in Oakland, it was very much its own entity. It had its own identity. It certainly gained momentum and traction because of the Occupy Wall Street movement. But in many ways, it was kind of a continuous protest movement that was also somewhat kind of connected to some of the student protests on the UC campuses over the tuition increases that have been going on over the past few years. And also, a couple years ago, there was a sort of infamous incident where a passenger on the BART train in the rapid transit train in outside San Francisco was shot in Oakland by BART officers. And Oakland was sort of the center of that protest movement as well. So once the kind of Occupy Oakland movement started, you know, it was very much part of the bigger Occupy Wall Street movement, but at the same time, it was a movement with its own identity and its own history, really.
Mm-hmm. And you wrote that radicals are drawn to Oakland because it's urban, dangerous, and poor. So
yeah.
Is New York City no longer any of those things?
Well, I mean, I think if you what I was trying to do there was sort of draw a distinction between the Occupy Wall Street movement and, say, the Occupy movement in New York, which, as we all know, was really centered downtown in Wall Street, really kind of where all the great monuments to capitalism are. And of course, you know, New York is this city of the very rich and the very poor. And so, you know, it was in that sense a very appropriate place to protest income inequality. In Oakland, you know, I think that the fact that Oakland had such a vibrant Occupy movement is in a sense surprising, because, you know, it's not a city with a lot of financial institutions, with great big skyscrapers filled with investment bankers and financiers. It's really a working class kind of gritty city. So in that sense, if the Occupy Wall Street movement was a protest against, largely against, and I'm generalizing a bit, but against income inequality and the growing income inequality in America, and against the influence of banks, et cetera, Oakland was a somewhat surprising place for such a vibrant outpost.
It is a bit surprising, the lack of financial institutions seeming to create or give rise to this movement. I mean, yep. New York City had this constant tension around Wall Street. The mayor likes to remind us that the financial sector gives us enormous tax revenue, but there is also this real confrontation between rich and poor every day in the streets of New York. It still doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, in Oakland, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that you know, there are a number of explanations for it, and I think, you know, the one and probably biggest one is that in some ways what the Occupy Oakland protest was about was less a protest against, kind of pure protest against inequality and against the influence of the banks, and more, I think, a protest against against what's sort of happening now a bit in Oakland, which is really, you know, for lack of a better term, gentrification. That it's becoming a businesses are because there's so much money sort of flowing in its surroundings in San Francisco and Silicon Valley, and that money's starting to spill over into Oakland. So in part, I think that Occupy Oakland was less a protest against what Oakland is than what it's in danger of becoming, according mm-hmm. to those who kind of led the movement. Another distinction I would draw is that, you know, it was a very radical movement in Oakland, Occupy, a far more radical, I would say, than it was in Manhattan and in other big cities. And I think that's important, too, because I think that what was going on in at the sort of core of the Occupy Oakland movement was not simply a desire to reform the process and to reform the way the system works, our political system, our financial system, et cetera. It was really at the roots of it was almost a kind of kind of anarchist theology, a belief that we had to do more than just reform the system. We had to really bring the whole system down.
Well, Jonathan, we had a caller who noted that we saw the riots in Oakland. Did the violence alienate people or draw them in?
I mean, I think that by and large it alienated people. I think that sort of quite a few Oaklanders whom I met were put off by all of the destruction that they saw, by the breaking of windows, by the actions of the so-called black bloc, who cover their faces, who sort of dress like ninjas and so that they can't be identified. I think that there were moments when the community in the city of Oakland really felt like it was behind the movement, and this was particularly early on. But then I think it did kind of become increasingly as the sort of outer rings of progressives started to fall away. It became an increasingly radical movement because the radicals kind of hung on, and I think that did alienate people. I mean, they broke into City Hall at one point and caused destruction inside City Hall, and I think that put a lot of people off, and particularly for a city that's really trying to lure small business owners, that's a city that's really struggling financially, to have that kind of image and to have that kind of, frankly, destruction happen there is going to be a turnoff to potential investors. And I think if you're concerned about the fate of the city, it's a little worrisome.
One last question.
Sure.
One of the activist leaders you spoke to said that the Occupy Wall Street encampment here in the city bothered him because it was a lot of people without an agenda, with more questions than answers.
Yeah.
What were the answers in Oakland? Were there any answers there? We got about a minute.
Yeah. Well, I think that there was, I think that there's a more of a kind of a confrontational sense there. So, you had these weekly protests against the police. You had protests at home foreclosure auctions, and again, I think you had not so much the sense of progressivism and the sense of we need change, but more of we need to destroy. And I think that in some ways, that made it was actually attractive to some militants and radicals in the area, because it felt more alive, and it felt like there were these real clashes going on with the police, and I think that did make it different from Occupy Wall Street in New York. It did get messier.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was attractive to some people.
It made us feel more alive. We'll have to leave it there. Thank you very much, Jonathan.
My pleasure.
Jonathan Mahler is contributing writer to the New York Times Magazine, who wrote the piece about Oakland's activism in the last issue. He's also author of Ladies and Gentlemen, The Bronx is Burning. I'm Brooke Gladstone in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC and WNYC.org. Stay with us.